Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Work Your Wealth podcast, the show where we're teaching you how to make smarter choices with your money. I'm your host, Mary Beth Storjahan, certified financial planner and founder of Workable Wealth. Today on the show, I'm super excited to have my friend Whitney Hansen as a guest. Whitney is a personal finance coach, entrepreneur, and she is the host of her own podcast, The Money Nerds Podcast. She teaches overwhelmed millennials how to pay off debt and how to be financially independent. She makes it a lot of fun. She sprinkles in a little bit of silliness, and she has some awesome accomplishments behind her, such as paying off $30,000 of debt in 10 months, buying her first home at the age of 19, and she paid $472 for her master's degree. Whitney, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mary Beth. I'm so excited to be here.
Thanks for being here. So I, in kind of reading and prepping and doing the little bio review for the show, let's just talk really quick about how you paid $472 exactly for your master's degree. I would love to hear that story before we jump into our topic.
Totally. So that is something that, yeah, most people are like, how the heck do you do that? So for when I was going back to grad school, I was working on my master's in business, and I was trying to figure out how do you finance college? And I had already paid off all that debt. So I'm like, okay, I'm not doing the student loan route again. Like, done. That was a lot of work. So right. I made a list of all the different ways to finance. And I found out that if you work for a university in a full-time or even sometimes part-time position, then they give you a discount on your tuition. So my credits were $5 a credit. Tack in a couple late fees because I was not that diligent at that time. And it equated to $472.
That's amazing. And that is like, that's a really good return on your money to get a degree.
Yeah,
for $472.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of one of those little hacks where people don't really know that. So if you're trying to go back to grad school in any way, a graduate assistantship is usually a common one, but you don't really make very much money in those. And then, yeah, just go work for a university. Really good little hack there.
Did you just narrow it down to a university you could work at, or did you target one specifically? How did you kind of go about finding out which schools had which programs?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So I actually didn't really care too much about which college was going to be best for me. I was more interested in the educational piece. So I'm like, okay, I went to Boise State is where I got my undergrad and my master's from. And that's where I live now too. And I loved the school. I thought it was really cool. So that was an easy decision for me. And it was a part-time program. So it was a three-year program that I was in. And it worked out really well because for the tuition discount, a lot of times there's little caveats there. So for me, one of those was 9 credits a semester was the cap. And in a part-time program, that's exactly what I was at. So it worked out really well.
That's awesome. I love it. I love when people get creative to go after their dreams and to save a lot of money. I think it's smart.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, right? It's like otherwise student loans could literally eat you alive. So you've got to be kind of careful.
They could. I talked to somebody yesterday who has
$260,000. Oh, no.
And my heart literally just like sunk.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's tough. And it's really, yeah. So I think getting out with $500, fantastic.
Yeah, I could cash flow that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the reason I had you on the show today, I want to talk about something that I know is important to me and it's important to you. And I'll link to Whitney's Instagram and all of her websites and everything in the show notes. But Whitney is super passionate about traveling, and she's been to some amazing places locally and internationally. And I wanted to talk today specifically about how somebody like you, you know, a personal finance person, you've done a lot of stuff with your debt. So obviously you're really into your budget and you're really into, you know, making your money work for you. So I'm just curious as to how are you making travel a priority in your life? What are you doing? I mean, are you saving for it ahead of time? How do you get to take these great trips?
Oh, this is my favorite thing to talk about and something I don't usually get to share too much on my own podcast and blog. So thank you for having me chat about this.
Of course. So
the way it all started was I think I was feeling like a lot of people normally feel. So I was looking at my life and I was in my mid-20s. I'm like, you know, I love traveling. It's so much fun, but I can't afford it. I don't have enough money. Something always comes up. Anytime I go to look for a certain vacation, if I want to go to Hawaii, it's way too expensive. So I was just feeling like, oh my God, I mean, I'll travel someday, but I don't know when. And finally, I had this realization, and I actually think it was from Instagram. I was looking at other people's travel pictures. I'm like, what the crap? How are they doing this? This is really cool. And so I got this little spark of inspiration of why am I waiting? Why am I deferring the things that matter most to me until this like fictitional, it'll be better when moment. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this travel stuff, even if it's just road trips. So that's how I started. And the first big road trip that I took was a 9.5-hour drive to Zion National Park. And it was crazy because it was 9.5 hour drive over the course of, I think we were there maybe 4 days, if that. It might even have been three. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. So we went there and it was so much fun. And I had a really, really great time. And the memories and the experiences were just incredible that I came back. And every single weekend that summer, I went somewhere. So it might have only been like a 2 hour drive. It might have just been a little hike here and there, but I made it a priority and it was really cool. So that's kind of where it all started.
So you started locally, something that was kind of like bite-sized, easy to accomplish, easier to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. And what I found too is if you start with the bite-sized, easy to accomplish trips, you can start to do that really cheap. Like it's gas in your car, it's cheap hotels, like you can do it very budget friendly. And so that's where I started. And then I started to discover how to find cheaper flights. I don't actually do like credit card hacking or anything like that. I actually don't even have a credit card, which is weird, I know.
Oh, wow.
I know, very strange. Yeah, might be for another day, but so I don't do that. So it was really important for me to find flights that were really cheap and to pretty cool places. And so that's kind of how I've been doing that. I'm happy to chat about that further too.
Perfect. Yeah. So yeah, talk about how you're making that happen.
Yeah. So there's two resources that I use very regularly. The first one is google.com/flights. And so what Google Flights will let you do is it's really cool. So you can type in what dates do you want to go? So just do like a rough search. I think I might want to go somewhere in July. I don't know, but I'm going to search anyways. And then instead of typing a specific destination, so instead of saying I want to go to Italy, you would just type in Europe in the search bar from your destination airport. For me, it's Boise to Europe. And then I search in May or July or whenever I want to go. And I start to see, are there any good deals? And immediately you start to see which weeks are pretty good and which weeks are just really expensive. So you can start to play with that feature alone and just dive in and figure out where's the best place, where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. So the way I travel is very different than most people. I've kind of like flipped the way I think about it. So instead of destination seeking, I go based on what's going to be the cheapest and where can I get the biggest bang for my buck.
Oh, I love that.
So that's where I start.
That's kind of adventurous.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I think it's kind of a fun way to go if you don't really care exactly where you go. Like there's so many countries I want to go to and I know I'll find a good deal eventually, but if a good deal comes up in the meantime, I don't want to prolong my life further. I want to go enjoy my money now. And so that's how I approach travel is where's a good deal first. I don't really say, okay, I have to go during these dates. That is kind of important, but I'm very lucky that I've built a life where that doesn't matter as much. And so I will use Google Flights as a big one. And then the one that I recently discovered that I think is like the coolest thing ever is called Scott's Cheap Flights. Have you used this one yet?
I have not. I've heard about it recently. I don't know if it was from you, but I talked about this recently with somebody. I haven't used it though.
It is the coolest thing ever. So I interviewed him on my podcast too, and I have been loving what he does. So it's for people that kind of are untraditional travelers. So the people that know they like to travel, but want to do it really inexpensively and just want notifications of, hey, tell me when a good deal to Tokyo comes up. And so what it does is he will send you an email when he finds really good deals and he'll tell you which airports they are from. So for me, Boise is notoriously a really crappy airport to get out of. So I will check for, occasionally I find good deals from Boise, but I'll look at Salt Lake. I'll look at Portland. I will look at LAX. So I find the airports that are still really good deals and I know are cheap for me to get to as well. Gotcha. So anytime he sends out an email with a great deal, that's when I jump on it. And so for, like, I'll give you guys a little example. My family is going to Amsterdam over Thanksgiving break. And we paid $440 for a ticket round trip to go to Amsterdam.
Wow, that's amazing.
Isn't that crazy? And so that's like, if you don't want to search Google Flights all day long, which most of us don't, Scott's Cheap Flights does that. And he's not the only one. There's a lot of different ones out there, but I think his is the coolest.
So wait, so you sign up for it and then they just send you emails kind of like when a deal pops up? Do you like select your airports and then just get notifications?
Exactly the case. Yep.
Nice.
So it's really sweet.
So if you want to feed your wanderlust and desires to travel,
Yeah, I guess the caveat there is to be careful, because if you're trying to be better with your money and you're seeing all these great deals, you are definitely going to be tempted to spend. So right. Just be careful.
Right. And so with that, how do you save for travel then? Do you just, is it out of your monthly mm-hmm. budget? How do you work it in with your other goals?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. What I do typically is I will have a travel savings account. And it's just a standard savings account, nothing special at all. And every month I'm kicking in a little bit of money towards that savings account. So I have this fund there, and it's not designated. It's not like my Hawaii fund. It's just travel fund. So if I find a really great deal and I have that money in my account, I'll just book that flight and life goes on. So that's kind of how I approach it, is I just always have that cash reserve for travel. So when a good deal comes up, I can jump on it and I immediately have that money. I'm not charging it to a card, like it's paid for upright. And that helps a lot. It really does.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do in our house also. And I have a lot of my clients do that. Just open the travel savings account and work it into your budget on a monthly basis and set the money aside. So whatever your annual travel goal is, break it down into a monthly expense and then put money in there. And that's how we've been able to make a lot of trips happen. And then we'll also do things like when we get a tax refund, or if we come into like a little extra money, we'll take a percentage of that and jump it into the travel savings also.
Yep, so same.
It's exactly become so much easier to make travel happen as opposed to, I don't know, trying to find the cash, you know, on like spontaneously, you know, when something pops up. Knowing the money is in the account gives you so much more flexibility and freedom.
Yeah, it really does. And one more thing about flights, because I know that's, if you're traveling internationally or even nationally, that can be the biggest burden financially, aside from hotels too. But with flights, they actually go on sale a lot. Like so much more than I even thought they did. I received just two notifications from LAX, let me see, it was LAX to Athens for like $400. There was one to Rome from LAX for $400, Boston $336. Oh. So it's like it's not uncommon. And if you are patient and you've got the money set aside and you don't care exactly where you go, I mean, you'll find some really good deals. You really will.
That's amazing. And so you're talking, you got these notifications through the Scott's Cheap Flights or
through my man Scott.
Nice. All right, I'm definitely linking to this and probably going to spend a couple hours on there as soon as we wrap up this interview.
You're gonna freaking love it. So I will say, it's not a traditional search engine like you would think of Priceline, Orbitz, any of those. So you don't search, you sign up, and there's a free membership and then a paid one. The paid one is $40 a year. That's what I opted for because I love traveling so much. And so with the free version, which is great, it's amazing, and I think that's where everybody should start, you get notifications when they come up. So you actually may not get a notification for a day or two. So just be prepared. Don't think it's like a search engine kind of thing. So don't be discouraged if you're like, where's my good deals? They will come, I promise.
Awesome. And so what's the difference with the paid one then?
Yeah. So the paid one, to my understanding, is you get access to more deals. So the free version gets like a third of them, I believe. And then the paid version gets more deals. And then for the really great deals, so in November, December-ish, there was amazing deals all across the United States to go to Europe. So we jumped on a $420 round trip flight from Boise to Rome.
Ah.
Actually, it was to Venice.
I remember you went to Italy.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did Venice and Rome. But that was a notification that if I had the paid version, I would have received that earlier. So just a little extra bonus, I guess.
Awesome. Okay. So, and then once you're at your destination, I guess, do you have any tips in terms of lodging, hotels, hostels, Airbnbs, VRBO? What's your preference?
Yeah. So this is fascinating because it's something I didn't even quite realize. But everywhere in Europe, if you're going to travel to Europe, Airbnb is great. It's a really good option. But a lot of the hotels in the bigger cities are equally priced and sometimes even cheaper. So that was something I had to learn the hard way on. So do your research on hotels.com is usually what I use. And then search on Airbnb as well. I think Airbnb is the coolest thing ever because you get to experience how local people live and like the communities they live in. And it's just a really unique experience. So I do research on, hotels.com and then Airbnb. I've played around with VRBO. I don't really use that one quite as much. Those tend to be my two go-to places.
I never used Airbnb for Europe. I used VRBO, and my husband and I went. We rented, like, one of our favorite memories was we got a little studio apartment by the Spanish Steps in Rome. And oh my gosh, it was, we were there for 5 nights and it was fantastic. It was just like the highlight. So it just depends also on the experience that you want to. So hotels, if you're shopping on price, definitely look at both options and then just kind of weigh that against the experience as well.
Completely. Yeah. And I love that you mentioned that. My version of travel, just so everybody knows, is to go not necessarily as cheaply as possible. I'm not staying in hostels or anything, although some hostels are really cool. But it is to keep it to a minimum so I can travel and have those experiences more frequently. So that's just me personally. But some people are really happy with a couple really amazing trips per year. I would just prefer maybe like 4 or 5.
Yeah. So it's one of those things too, where my best friend and I have been to Europe. I have no idea how many times together. And we slowly graduated from hostels into hotels into over time.
Moving on up.
When we were like, okay, we could totally share rooms. And we're like, okay, now we'll have a private hostel room. And then we're like, okay, let's get a hotel and have some, you know, let's not have to make our own bed. It's really funny. I was just looking through pictures of our Europe adventures a couple days ago. Okay, so what do you think is like reasonable, or have you ever thought about this in terms of like what's a reasonable percentage of your budget? I know I get asked all the time, like how much should somebody spend on travel, or how should they prioritize it with their other savings goals?
Good question. So I don't think there's really one set answer, but the rule of thumb that I tend to use is I will rank, and I think you do something similar too, where you rank out all of your priorities, your values, what's most important to you. And then once you do that, you can start to see. So for me, travel's pretty much the most important thing. Eating out, not so much. I don't really care about that. So I usually only spend $50 a month on eating out and coffee, which sounds crazy, but it works for me.
That's because awesome.
Yeah, it's a little nerdy, but I'd rather spend that money on travel. So that's kind of how I structure it. So a larger percentage is going towards travel. I will never, ever tap into what should be going towards retirement. So that is a fixed amount. No matter what, I'm always saving at least 20%. So I don't touch that piece at all. So none of my financial goals will ever come into crossing paths with that. So once you have that piece taken care of, though, if you have more money that you want to stock away towards travel or a car or whatever the heck it is, do that. But just know it's going to come at an expense of another goal. So my car is a 2001 Toyota Celica. It's not cute, but I don't care because I'd rather have the experiences of traveling.
So with the travel goal, so we talked flights, we talked lodging. What about planning for when you're there? Do you find yourself like budgeting? So dining out's not a priority when you're here, when you're local, but when you're traveling, do you find like dining out being a part of the budget? Or do you try and do just site visits or touristy stuff that's free? How do you plan for those expenses?
Yeah, great question. Okay, so for food, let's tackle that one first. For food, you've got to kind of know the culture and you've got to understand what are the apps that they're using primarily. In Europe, they don't really use Yelp. They use it, but it's not as common as TripAdvisor. So when you're going there, you can start to find better restaurants that are in your price range, whether it's the $1 sign or two or three or four or whatever it is. But you can find restaurants that are in your price range that are really amazing based on the reviews. So I'm definitely a review seeker. I'm constantly looking at that stuff. So know where you're going to be, which apps are they using primarily. And then I think we always assume that the nicest restaurants are going to be the best experiences. And sometimes that's true, but not always. I've had some of the best food from just food carts on the side of the road that have been amazing. And so I think do a combination of both so you get a feel for all different types of cuisine there, but definitely know which apps they use primarily. So that's the kind of the food hack. And then for the experiences, excursions, whatever you want to call it, the museums, that kind of stuff, a lot of those places will have package deals where you can go check out the top three locations for, I don't know, 50 euros or whatever it might be. So those are a really good one. But there's a lot of free walking tours in almost every city. And I have found that the free walking tours are sometimes better than the paid expensive excursions too. It's crazy. So make sure you tip them. Don't be a jerk.
Right, but so tip the budget for that.
Definitely tip. Yeah, don't be that person. But they are amazing. They work hard for their money on those free tours, and you get some really cool behind the scenes looks that you don't necessarily see in the touristy excursions.
That's so funny. I think I've never done the package deals in each city. I see them all over the place, but I've never actually explored them. That's a really good point. The walking tours. I mean, I definitely am big on free walking tours as well. You mostly, once you get into the big city, you either find them ahead of time or you typically will run into them once you're in the city.
I totally agree. I think another really fun way to get to know the place that you're going to, because there's a touristy side and then there's the real side. And if you want to experience how people actually live in different cities, hop into a Facebook group. There's so many different travel Facebook groups. It's not even funny, but you can start to connect with different people in those groups and just say, hey, I'm going to be in Rome. I'm going to be there for a week. What are the things that I absolutely have to see? And they'll share all kinds of different experiences. Of course, hit all the touristy places. I think that's kind of a big deal. But yeah, you can definitely do it pretty cheaply. You don't have to spend a ton of money.
Yeah, one of the things that we did, I think, in Europe, actually, the last time I went, was we actually did, I never thought about TripAdvisor. I use TripAdvisor a lot, like at home when I'm searching before I go. But once I'm there, I ended up using Yelp. But we used Yelp a lot for the restaurant recommendations. And we'd kind of would go off those, whether it was the $1 sign, $3 sign, or whatever. But it was really fun to actually go to like the rated places as opposed to being stuck with kind of what's in your neighborhood. I remember seeking out specific restaurants, and I do this when I travel to New York and do things too. I'm like, where are the food is my thing. I'm like, let's eat some amazing food. So last year we went to New York and I was like, I planned out all of our restaurants, like every meal. But yeah, I think leveraging technology, I think it's so, traveling today is so much different than traveling like 5-10 years ago. There's so many resources at your fingertips and you have Wi-Fi basically anywhere you go. So making sure that you're actually, I think it's cool to do the cultural stuff and like the authentic stuff as opposed to the mainstream. So that's the best part too, to have that really authentic experience. I think it is nice to go somewhere where, if you're in Italy, yes, go where it's, they all speak Italian and like stumble your way through it if you can't read the menu, because typically those are the best memories and meals too, if there's not any English on the menu. So
right there with you. In Rome, I don't know if you went to, there's a little cappuccino place. Italy has the best cappuccinos. They're amazing. But this little place we stumbled into is my fiance and I, and we got a cronetti, which is kind of like a croissant, but don't call it that, I hear. So a cronetti and a cappuccino for €5 total for both of us.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
And it was so good. To this day, I still dream of that cappuccino. It was amazing. Those are fun experiences.
Exactly. And you know, while we were talking about websites, I don't know if you've ever used this one. One of my friends just recently talked about, it was a year ago, I think she mentioned she books a lot of trips on Costco Travel. And we have Costco membership. And I started looking and they have some fantastic deals on Costco Travel. So if you're listening and you have Costco, I would definitely stumble over there as well. We went to an all-inclusive resort in Cabo in January this year, and it was amazing. And being a money nerd person, of course, couldn't help but like, you meet people there and you're like, I couldn't ask, like, how much did you pay for your trip? And I love, you know, I loved hearing, like, having conversations with people. And we spent like at least $1,000 less than other people who had not booked on Costco Travel. So, and we had a glorious view, everything. So it was really interesting. So that was one of the kind of secret, not so secret things that apparently I hadn't been using. But now if we're in San Diego, so we kind of try and look like Hawaii or Mexico, those areas that are kind of close by, but you can actually find some great deals there as well.
Very good to know. I have not used that yet either. So I'll definitely keep that in the back of my mind.
Yeah. So we talked about the food. We talked about walking. So when you're traveling, or sorry, I mean the tours and touristy stuff, when you're traveling, do you try to budget yourself out ahead of time? Do you kind of give yourself like, this is how much I have to spend the whole time I'm there? Or how do you figure it out so that you don't go over what's in your travel account?
Yeah, basically whatever is in my travel account, that's what I have to spend for that specific trip. So I'll look at that account. And honestly, if your priority is to travel frequently, you do a pretty good job of self-regulating. But I know like that's not for everybody, so keep that in the back of your mind too. But for us, we'll just look at it and just plan roughly how much are we going to spend on food. Typically, I plan for, usually it's no more than $30 a day for food, which it sounds weird, but sometimes you get the free breakfast at the hotel. So if I'm trying to cut expenses a little bit, I can self-regulate by looking at, I'm going to go to a really nice restaurant on Thursday night, so I probably want to do a cheaper breakfast here. So you can start to figure out that kind of stuff pretty easily. So I do sort of have a set budget, but not as much as I used to anymore. It's if there's a really great thing that I see, I will spend the money on that as long as I don't take out debt. That's really important to me. but I will spend the money on that for that experience. And if that means I can't eat out one more day, I don't really care. Like, that's not that big of a deal. So I'll kind of just like self-regulate based on all the experiences so far, which is a really not a very clear-cut answer, but that's kind of what I do.
No, that makes sense. I mean, that's kind of what, well, for us, we kind of have a rough estimate of what we can spend while we're there. And then I budget out each day. So I try to plan ahead of time of like the things that we want to do the research on the other package deals for the touristy stuff. And not going to lie, my husband and I, when we went to Europe last time, we would do the audio tours and we got the audio split thing. So we'd plug two headphones into one.
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah. So we couldn't like wander far apart, but it was actually saved us. Like, you know, when you're, especially if you're doing a lot of that, we wanted to make sure that we got the audio tours. So, I mean, that saved us $10, 10, you know, 15 euros a pop. So that's kind of one way to hack the system as well. You're just walking kind of close together.
Arm in arm.
Yeah. So on that note, though, what have you found in terms of traveling with a companion or traveling with friends? How do you communicate and prioritize? Because you might have different goals, right? Or different ways of traveling. How do you find a happy medium?
I'm going to have a better answer for that next week. I'm going to Costa Rica on Tuesday with 6 people.
Oh my gosh.
So it'll be a little crazy, but typically it's just my fiance and I travel together. So he is super chill, doesn't really care what we do. I'm more of the type A, we need to hit these certain sites and I've got my list, but he's really good about just going with the flow. So I've been very fortunate there. But if you are traveling with people, I think it's okay to go do your own thing. And I think we feel obligated to stick together as a group, but you really don't have to. Like, you can go branch off. And if you want to go sit at a coffee shop all day and people watch, you do you. That's okay. So I think it's giving yourself permission to go off the beaten path and not feel obligated to be with everybody the entire time.
That's so important. My first trip to Europe was right out of college, and there was 5 girls and we were trying to do what everybody wanted. And I just remember being exhausted, and it was in Florence, and I remember, and they wanted to go somewhere, and I was like, no, I just need a break. And I opted out. I just opted out. I'm like, I'm just going to hang out here. And sometimes you just need that downtime, especially if you are traveling with groups or friends. You need to make sure that you feel comfortable taking a step back, and because then you end up resentful too. It's your trip too. So making sure that you're, again, it's something you're using your money to be happy. So use your money and actually spend that time doing something that you enjoy.
Couldn't agree more. And God bless you for going with 5 females.
Oh my gosh. That was when we were like hostels, and you know, I had definitely different tolerances back then than I do now. Now I'm like, that's why I'm like, now give me my quiet hotel and my quiet VRBO. Don't have time for these drunken teenagers. So, okay.
That's awesome.
So let's transition to some wrap-up questions. What would you say is the best financial advice you've ever received?
So I'm going to keep this one travel related since we can stay on topic. The best financial advice I've ever received is to pay off your debt as quickly as you can. Pretend like you still have that debt, but save that towards travel instead and go spend your money on as many experiences as you possibly can.
Yes. Experiences over possessions.
Completely.
I love that advice. That's fantastic advice.
Thank you.
And so to flip that, what is the worst money advice you've ever received?
The worst money advice I've ever received is that you have to carry a balance on your credit card in order to build your credit.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very frustrating one for me that I've been hearing more and more from students that I work with, and it drives me crazy.
That's really interesting. I mean, I get asked that a lot, if you need to. And no, you don't need to. You need to use the card and pay off the balance each month.
Yep, exactly.
So what would you say is your favorite money mistake you've made?
My favorite money mistake that I've ever made, it's the best lesson I've ever had. I financed a car when I was in high school. So I had my really cute Pontiac Sunfire convertible and thought I was the coolest. And so I was making $120 a month car payments on this car. And I didn't do my research before I bought the car. It had this weird little ticking noise in the engine, and I thought it was normal. So I moved forward. They told me it was just an overhead cam, and that's just a normal sound for that car. And so, like an idiot, I trusted that. And my car engine blew a month later. So I was making payments on a broken down car.
Oh, no.
So it was terrible, but it's my favorite because I will never make that mistake again. And I will always make sure to check everything out on the car before I make any car purchases.
Ouch. So what did you end up doing? Did you just have to keep paying it or get the engine fixed?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I tried to go through the Lemon Law route and no, it didn't qualify for that. So I just had to save up money to buy a new engine, which sucked, but it was a good lesson.
That is a good lesson. And then what does being wealthy mean to you?
I think for me, being wealthy is having enough money in the bank that you feel secure. So you don't have to worry about any financial hiccups or anything. You've got that piece covered. But more than anything, I think being wealthy is more of the quality of life that you have. If you, for me, it's travel, living very minimally. Actually, I don't like to spend a lot of money on possessions. So for me, it's just being wealthy is just being very rich in experiences.
Well, now I have a desire to take like 12 trips after this interview.
I hope so. I hope you do. And tag me in all your pictures.
I will. Like, thank you for the influence, Whitney. Okay. So tell our listeners how they can contact you.
The best place to go is WhitneyHanson.com. You'll find all my social profiles, my podcast, blog posts, everything is on WhitneyHanson.com.
Perfect. All right. I will make sure to link to everything that we talked about today, all of the resources, tips, websites. I'll link to all of Whitney's information as well. Thank you so much for being on the show. I loved having you here.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
That was such a fun interview. If you enjoyed today's show, I'd love if you could take 2 minutes to head over to iTunes to leave a quick review and rating for the Work Your Wealth podcast and share your thoughts on the show.